Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Oh, awesome. Now I can hear myself. Thanks, MOTAT. So, Alan.
Sherry.
How am I doing so far?
You're doing fabulously so far.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll start with helium hydride. What's
yes.
that?
Okay, right. Where do we start? So, the big news here is that this molecule is thought to be the first molecule that was created after the Big Bang.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Ooh. So we need to sort of delve back into the realms of the very, very, very long ago and talk about what happened in the Big Bang. And so in the beginning, there was the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And everything came from that. And around about 380,000 years after that, everything had cooled down.
So there's a big bang,
yep.
And then there was the big cool.
Well, everything cooled down, and everything is still continuing to cool down.
Okay.
The entire universe is cooling down. But after the Big Bang, you had all of your components of atoms and stuff like that. So you had your protons and your electrons, blah, blah, blah. But it was too hot for them to get together and form atoms.
Mm.
Okay? So it took around about 380,000 years before things cooled down enough, and that was around about 4,000 degrees Celsius, which is pretty hot, in order for these things to get together and form atoms. And once you start forming atoms, you can then start forming molecules.
Right.
Because molecules are just collections of atoms, okay?
Yes, I remember from NCEA science.
So the first atom to actually be formed was surprisingly helium.
Okay.
Which was against what I thought. I thought it'd be hydrogen because that's the simplest one.
Mm.
But helium is, in fact, the first atom that's formed. And then what happens is that can get together with a proton, which is H+, and form this thing, helium hydride, which is the world's first, or the universe's, first molecule.
Ah.
Okay. And that's got the formula HEH with a positive charge on it. HEH+.
Right.
So it's not really a molecule, it's a molecular ion, but we won't worry too much about that. Okay. So anyway, this is the current theory that's out there of what happened after the Big Bang. And this is thought to be, by all the astrophysicists and people who know, the first molecule that was created after the Big Bang. So it should be out there in space somewhere.
Okay, so what...
It should be.
What does it do?
It doesn't do anything. It doesn't do a damn thing. Well, no, actually, that's not entirely true. Once you form HEH+, this helium hydride thing, then when that decomposes, you can form hydrogen molecules, which are a lot more stable. So HEH+, not the most stable beastie. Hydrogen molecules a lot more stable. So this was sort of an intermediate on the way to making stable molecules.
So where do they find it? Just on, as they're looking.
Well, that's the thing. Where do you find it? Because they made this in the lab in 1925. It's a fairly exotic thing, so you can't buy it in a bottle or anything like that.
Okay.
And so some clever people in, as I say, 1925 managed to make this stuff in the lab and to characterize it and say, yep, this is the right stuff. But all the astrophysicists and people who were, you know, talking about the Big Bang and stuff said, right, well, it should exist somewhere in the universe. So how do we find it? We need to look for it because this is a big hole in our theory. If we can't actually see it in the universe, then, you know, that doesn't bode well for our theory. So what they figured was that they would look in things called planetary nebulae.
So what's that?
So that's basically where stars go to die, pretty much.
Okay.
So stars eventually run out of fuel and they collapse in on themselves and they form white dwarfs. And in doing so, they give out lots and lots and lots and lots of energy. So you've got very high temperatures and you've got the kind of conditions where you could form this particular molecule. And so they decided to have a look for this. And not as simple as it seems, because... what they're looking for is how this little molecule rotates. That's the signature that they're looking for.
Mm.
So all of these little molecules rotate in a particular way at a particular frequency. And so what they need to do is to set up their spectrometers or their telescopes or call them what you will and look at that particular frequency and see if they can see it in outer space. Now, that's all very well in theory, but in practice, you've got this good old thing called an atmosphere on Earth.
That
makes life a little bit difficult because good old water and stuff get in the way. Okay, so they obscure that part that you're looking for.
Mm.
So what they had to do was to take this fancy spectrometer up in a converted 747 up to around about 12,000 metres, so up above most of the atmosphere, and fly around and point their telescope out the side of this thing.
Oh, yeah?
Basically, pointed at the one particular planetary nebula and see what they could find. And luckily, fortunately for them, after much deconvoluting of data and stuff, they did manage to find this particular frequency that they were looking for, which they could definitely assign to this HEH plus, this helium hydride. So everyone's pretty happy about that now, because it does confirm that this can be made under those sort of very, very forcing conditions.
Well, what does that mean for science?
What does it mean? It means that the current theories of what happened after the Big Bang are okay.
Oh, right, okay.
So so that's basically it. If your theory involves, you know, the formation of this particular molecule prior to any other molecule, then, you know, you should be able to see it somewhere out there in the hugeness of the universe. And so they've managed to do that. So this was a team from predominantly Germany, a little bit of help from the French and the Americans. And, so this just got published last week in Nature. And I guess, you know, all of the people who are worried about such things are quite happy.
That's pretty exciting, because I think the next big thing was the production of ammonia. That was also something that got a lot of scientists excited about, yeah?
Oh, very much so. Yes. So what's the most important chemical reaction on the Earth? There we go. There's a question for everybody in the studio.
What does our friend Bailey think?
What do you think, Bailey?
Oh, okay. Oxygen to carbon dioxide.
Oh, I was just, you know, we're busy inhaling O2, yeah. That's good. I like that.
I think it's fairly important.
It's fairly important. Where does the oxygen come from?
The trees.
Yes, it does. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
So,
so how do the trees make of oxygen?
Photosynthesis.
Yes, there we go. Okay.
Chlorophyll.
Right. So photosynthesis is a pretty important chemical reaction as well. Otherwise, life as we know it wouldn't be around, wouldn't it? Okay. So where do the trees come from?
The ground.
Thousands of years of evolution. We're getting there.
This is good.
Okay.
And what do we need for trees to grow, basically? This is
soil.
Soil, yeah. Water, yes. Solid. But, okay, so our
this is a primary school.
Our atmosphere is made up of like 21% oxygen and the rest basically nitrogen.
Okay.
So
where does ammonia fit into this?
Right, exactly. That's a bloody good question.
Right.
I like that. Right.
Isn't it like oxygen and stuff?
Now, everything that's living contains nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so nitrogen atoms are in our DNA, literally. Okay, they're in all of our proteins. All of the biological molecules that we require contain nitrogen. Now, where does that nitrogen come from? It comes from the atmosphere.
Right.
Okay, so we've got this 79% of the atmosphere being nitrogen. The trouble is that the nitrogen in the atmosphere is in the form of nitrogen molecules, N2.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
And the bond between those two nitrogen atoms and the nitrogen molecule is about the strongest bloody bond that you can get.
That's a good friendship right there.
Yeah. And it's really hard to break that bond. Okay, like really, really, really seriously difficult.
Is that covalent bond?
It is a covalent bond, yes.
Yes.
And moreover, it's a triple covalent bond. Yes. It's a triple. Yeah. So, now, nature, in the form of certain plants like legumes and et cetera, et cetera. Yep, beans, those sorts of things. So remember how you can't sort of plant the same field every year because things don't eventually grow and you've got to sort of move things around and blah, 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 blah. And in those fallow years, you plant legumes, you plant beans and stuff like that because they can what we call fix nitrogen. So have you heard of nitrogen fixation?
I have now.
Okay. So these plants are amazing. Or in fact, it's not plants so much, it's the bacteria on the plants. They are amazing because they can actually take in atmospheric nitrogen and they can spit out ammonia, essentially.
Hmm.
And they can do that at room temperature and pressure. And the thing is that they're a hell of a sight better at it than mankind. Okay?
So
humans can't do that so efficiently.
So beans are the best.
They're pretty impressive, yeah.
Right.
So humans They've been doing this for around about just over a century now in a thing called the Haber-Bosch process. And what they do is they take nitrogen and they take hydrogen and they mix it together, and they mix it together at very high temperatures, 400 degrees, very high pressures, 400 atmospheres, and ammonia comes out. And we make ammonia as a race at around about 300 tons per minute. So we're spitting out 300 tons per minute of
ammonia. Is that a lot?
It's quite a lot when it's 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And this particular reaction consumes 1% to 2% of all of the energy generated on planet Earth every year. Mm-hmm. And if you don't go wow at that, then you'll go wow at nothing. So let's have a communal wow for that.
Wow.
Okay, so if you could... Now, why do we need ammonia?
To help plants grow.
Yeah, we need to make fertilizer. Okay, to make fertilizers. Mm. Okay, so we need to get the nitrogen out of the air and make fertilizers out of it. Otherwise, we're going to... not survive. So it's a very, very important reaction. Now, if you can do that reaction under much milder conditions, you are going to save a truckload of energy, an absolute truckload, eye-wateringly huge amount of energy. So some scientists in Japan have reported that they can do this under conditions now of room temperature and pressure, using an entirely different method from this Haber process, which people have been using, as I say, for
over
100
years. That's actually pretty exciting. I can now see, that's good stuff.
Now, at the moment, it's just small scale. So you've yet to sort of translate that onto the big stage. You've got to, scale it up and everything and make sure that it still works under non-laboratory conditions, under the real-world conditions. But this is pretty exciting. And they use a couple of metals that you might not have heard of, samarium and molybdenum, in order to do that. The good old Haber process uses iron as a catalyst. So it's kind of sort of a brute force thing, those high pressures, temperatures, and iron. This is a little bit more elegant. It remains to be seen how this is going to go. Hopefully this might translate to an alternative method of making ammonia. And as I say, that is going to save the planet a hell of a lot of energy.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
That is exciting.
Yeah. So there we go. Cool.
And on our final story, I actually walked past a sign advertising this in Aotearoa Square the other day. I honestly thought it was part of the comedy festival. I thought it was but my ears are open. What's the Flat Earth Society?
So I have to admit, I really didn't read up on this too much because it's just not worth it, is it? Okay? So, for those of you who don't know, last week there was a conference in Auckland by the Flat Earth Society, and this is a worldwide bloody society, and people flew in from all around the world. See what I did there?
Yeah. You know?
Ka-ching. And the two major people behind this, they have got over 20 million YouTube views between them. This is
so
not
they're,
good.
So they're like, seriously, it's not satirical. This is the Earth is flat?
Yeah, well, this is what they're saying. They just can't figure out what sort of flat it is. They reckon that some of them think it's just a big sort of disc, and there's 45-metre high ice walls in Antarctica that are patrolled by armies to stop us going off the edge or something.
Blimey.
And other people think that we're this big dome and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And... oh, for God's sake. And we really shouldn't be talking about this because it just gives these people publicity. But how can people be so willfully stupid?
I mean, this is not ignorance. It was a joke, and then people got on a bandwagon and took it seriously, and then they just never clicked that it was satire.
Dear God, it's just a big conspiracy. Apparently, the Americans, the Russians, everybody else who's ever sent a spacecraft up there, it's all a conspiracy.
It's a big plan. To fool the dumb humans.
Look, you can go into outback Australia. If you go out to the back and beyond in New South Wales, you can see the bloody curvature of the Earth. It's that big out there, and flat. You can actually see it for yourself.
I reckon it's an optical illusion NASA's put out.
Didn't you hear Australia doesn't exist anyway? It's all a big conspiracy.
It's all a scam. It's all a conspiracy.
But it is. This is what they think, that the whole thing is a conspiracy. to, you know, and of course, you know, we didn't land on the moon either. And, you know, it's kind of weird. You can see that the moon is actually spherical, can't you? You look up to the moon on a full moon, you can actually see it's not flat. It's a sphere, isn't it? So it'd be kind of weird if Earth's the only bloody thing in the solar system or in the entire frickin' universe that is flat.
So it's as from your scientific background, you're saying that the Earth is round.
Yeah,
that's our conclusion.
Yeah, I think we're pretty sure about that.
We've got a question.
I have a question. So then how do they think it rotates around the sun? Does it just kind of flop or what?
It's like a frisbee that spins around?
Yeah, no, I don't think we rotate. I think the sun's rotating around us, I think, you know, like the light they thought way back in the 1400s, you know, before Copernicus came along and put everybody right, you know?
Yeah.
And Galileo got put in freaking house arrest for the last 20 years of his life for, you know, saying that the Earth moves rather than the sun.
They like reference Galileo and they're like, he was wrong. And it's like, he also didn't have the vast amount of technology that we have today.
Yeah. This was figured out a few hundred years ago, folks. So, you know, let's maybe put this one to bed.
Okay.
But...
That's a good way to end science. That's a good way to end science this week. Awesome. Thank you so much, Alan.
Okay, sure.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOCAP, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.